What's up, what's up? Welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thank you so much for downloading and listening. I am your host, Neil Horowitz. You can find me on Twitter at NJH287. Hit me up on LinkedIn as well, where I post more content. Visit the website, dsmsports.net. And, of course, follow the podcast across all your favorite podcast platforms. Or just pick one. That's cool, too. Awesome episode for you guys today. I think we're all excited about the prospect of football returning in the fall. And we're going to talk a little football social media with Stephen Huddy. He is social media coordinator for the Green Bay Packers. Also spent several years with the Cincinnati Bengals. We're going to go all into NFL social media strategy. Really good conversation coming up with Stephen. But first, you have this episode's helpful tool. And such a helpful tool is one I've talked about before, but it comes in handy now for a different reason that I want to go into, and it's the InShot app, InShot, InShot. I'm sure you're familiar with it if you work in the social media space or content space. It's a pretty handy mobile video editing tool. There's a lot of mobile video editing apps. InShot is one of the better ones for sure, and a cool use case for the app is the opportunity to extract audio and then save it for future purposes. Especially when you look at TikTok and all the focus on audio and original audio, starting to see some teams, some brands have original audio that they put on there and then can invite other users to then use that audio for their own content. Kind of a form of UGC using some audio provided by the brand in this case. You know, you're seeing sports start to use it with play calls or original audio content that they produce. And when you're in the InShot app, you can easily extract that audio and then have it for safekeeping. Or you can obviously, you know, add it to a different video if you like as well, right on the spot. But you can have a nice file of all your saved audio files, whether it's an exciting call or some music from the venue, from the game presentation, or a really great sound bite that you can play off of, whatever it may be, some original music content that you guys produce or can get from a Battle of the Bands promotion or whatever it may be. It's a great place to just store your original audio. You can then use it for TikTok, use it for other platforms as well when you have the right opportunity. So check it out. Give it a go. It's pretty easy to use if you haven't done the extract audio piece before. And it's also, you can edit pretty easily as well in the app with your video. So it's the InShot app. You may have it on your phone already, but try playing around with the audio options. All right, stick around. Great interview coming up with Stephen Huddy of the Green Bay Packers. Back from this episode's opening segment. Now I am so psyched for today's guest, someone who he'll tell you that I've been trying to get on this podcast for a little while now. It's been exciting last year for this guest, and we're excited to pick his brain on all things social, NFL, Packers, little Bengals. The podcast guest today is Stephen Huddy, social media coordinator for the Green Bay Packers. And welcome to the podcast today, Stephen.
Hey, thanks for having me. Sorry I've been playing hard to get.
No worries at all. You already have some bonus points because you share the first name with my twin brother, so we already have that connection going. And psyched to learn all about what you do with the Packers, which is tremendous, as well as your previous work. Before we get into the meat of our discussion, though, Stephen, tell us about, you know, how you got to where you are today. Tell us your career path and getting started with your career, working with the Bengals, getting started with the Packers, and any tips for folks that want to do what you do.
Yeah, I went to University of Wisconsin, and I majored in communication arts with an emphasis on radio, TV, and film. And honestly, I really got my start with the athletic department there. I worked in video services for 3 years as a student employee. Mm-hmm. And that was a lot of post-production work for the website and back then the new YouTube channel. And we worked with Big Ten Network to do some live broadcasts as well. And eventually I started dabbling in the football side as well as my career there went on. And during my time, I also took an internship with a minor league baseball team, the Beloit Snappers, and they were the single-A affiliate of the Minnesota Twins at the time. And that was very much do everything, ticket sales, concessions, sell tickets. All right, I already said that. Social media. I was even the announcer for a game once.
Wow.
So it's kind of diversify. And after all that was done, I was graduating and there wasn't an opportunity with the athletic department. And the video director for Wisconsin at the time, he's now with the Seattle Seahawks. And previously, before Wisconsin. He was with a couple NFL teams, and one of his friends was saying that he was having some opportunities open up, just, you know, video assistant internship type of deal, and well, potentially opening up. So I sent my stuff out there, and it was opportunity kind of, you know, met luck. And he initially said that there wasn't anything, and then a couple days later goes, hey, it's something opened up, and it was right before training camp. So I had to go and pack up and move in about a week and a half, and went right into the 2013 season with the Bengals right at the start of training camp.
Wow. When you were in school, it sounded like you gravitated to the athletic department almost right away. Did you kind of know going in, hey, I want to see what I can do in sports and use these video skills and build up my video skills? Or was sports just something that you sort of fell in love with as you, you know, went there in school?
I always wanted to work in athletics. And initially when I was picking my school, I was debating if I wanted to be an athletic trainer or how I would be involved with sports. And the more I looked at athletic training, the amount of schooling that you'd have to go through and just the opportunities that you get through that, it's a great occupation, but I decided it might not be the path I wanted to go down. So I was looking at sports media, and it was blossoming at the time. It's, you know, the infancy of social media really kind of developing, and video wasn't even a huge part of the platforms yet. That kind of came down the line. Mm-hmm. So I was fortunate enough. I decided, you know, no matter what, if I don't get a job that pays very well after school, if I'm working in sports, at least I still get to go to the events, and that's pretty cool. So that's why I decided to kind of go that route.
No, that's something we can all relate to, I think, is, hey, this can be a job, is being able to go to sports events and hang out at them. and it seemed like, you know, certainly video became a good bread and butter for you. I mean, obviously, like, in social media these days, and really all going back in time, it's not just video, it's a lot of everything, but video is a key component in a lot of ways. And so it seemed like you appreciated that fact, and maybe that led to you getting the opportunity with the Bengals, is having those video capabilities. Was it more about the post-production and what you were able to learn? And tell us about how you learned that stuff in school as well. Was it classes? Was it just self-taught? Was it learning from others? And what were some of those key, you know, software and hardware things that you were able to pick up?
Honestly, a lot of what I picked up was through hands-on learning, and that was through the athletic department. And I would encourage anybody who's trying to get into social media or in sports in general. It's one thing to go through and have the classes at your college, but it's another thing to be able to apply them in real life situations. So while you're in school, don't wait till after, look for those opportunities. I worked under Drew Scherenbrock, and he was in charge of their post-production, and it taught me so much, and it was just amazing the opportunities that kind of came through that. So Marvin Lewis would always do these weekly pump-up tapes for the team. They'd show at the team meeting, and that was my main responsibility. I'd work with our special teams during the week and help with the practice video on that side, but at the end of the week, I would always work with our head coach to make sure we had this video ready to go for the team meeting that they'd play the night before a game.
Mm-hmm. Super cool. So really, like, you weren't necessarily creating videos that, at least that hype video wasn't necessarily fan-facing. It was for the players.
Exactly. Yeah, that's where I started, was more on the team side. And then after the 2013 season is when I moved into the digital media, social media side. That's public-facing and for the Bengals.com brand.
Yeah, that makes sense. So I guess give us an idea of, and we talked a little bit offline before we started recording about, you know, really being able to be part of starting something there with the Bengals and building up social and digital, and being part of those early days. So what was digital and social media like for the Bengals when you first started? And, you know, was it under marketing? Was it under PR? What was the access like? Sounds like it was decent. What was the state of the situation when you got started, and how did it kind of evolve as your time went on there?
It started underneath our IT department, surprisingly enough, when they decided to go the route of focusing on social media and digital production. It was a pretty lean staff at the time. It was myself and then Darius Howard, who does he's the director of digital for FC Cincinnati now. Mm-hmm. And with that, we kind of headed up all the, you know, app development, graphic design, website, video, and social media. kind of between the two of us.
Jeez. Just a few yeah. things on the list.
Well, and like I said, it was kind of the first look in a while to revamp that area. And honestly, that, again, was super beneficial to diversify my background. I was able to get involved with a lot of things and kind of become knowledgeable in the process of what it takes, be it video production or graphic design or app development. Mm-hmm. And that moving forward, I think that's only going to be a benefit. We did move the department under communications a couple mm-hmm. years after that. We hired a new director of communications. And as far as access went, because I had a background on the football side, I think there was just a trust there with our coaching staff that I wasn't going to do anything that would jeopardize game day. And I was mindful of, you know, kind of keeping fly on the wall mentality the first couple years because it's so easy to just all it takes is one mistake to ruin that trust.
Without.
So that's where we kind of started, and we were fortunate enough to have that access and, you know, be in the locker room for media availability and build up that relationship with players.
It definitely helps a ton, and probably being under the communication side doesn't hurt also. I'm knowing that, you know, the head of communications, the PR folks, the head of PR, or whatever you want to call them, VP of comms, is usually appreciative of making sure that we're portraying everyone in the best light, and, you know, and we're that's our first focus more than anything else. What were kind of the goals, I guess, as social started to grow up a little bit, and you guys got, you know, taken away from IT and put under communications? Like, were you guys, you know, trying to focus on just driving engagement, driving metrics, trying to highlight certain players, and especially with the Bengals, like, was there a certain brand or stories you were certainly you were trying to tell?
I mean, it's kind of all the above, really. We had our goals were to portray the team and offer a behind the scenes look at the players and their personalities. We wanted to tell the stories that maybe you don't get through a TV broadcast. At the same time, being kind of a two-man shop when we started in 2014, we knew we had to be the most efficient team in the league, or we tried to be. So we always were reviewing effort versus reward on every project. Mm-hmm. And honestly, like, my favorite story is the Devin and Leah Still story that kind of came out, where Devin Still's daughter was ill, and we ended up selling Devin Still jerseys to raise money for the children's hospital, and just that whole situation, you had to be so delicate with it, so you didn't know what the outcome was going to be, and you really hoped and prayed it was going to be positive, and thankfully it was. But there's just so many aspects of that story where you had to plan for what ifs, and it was a real heartwarming story that I think the whole country kind of got behind. And that was really rewarding to be a part of and kind of shedding light on that.
Oh, 100%. I mean, I think everyone probably remembers the great coverage that you guys did, and that got really on a national, international basis. If you can, how does a story like that come together? Like, how do you guys first learn about it? How is it brought to you? And then, you know, how does your bosses and even the player himself, like, make sure that you guys are treating it with that delicate touch that it requires?
Well, as far as how it came to be, I can talk about how I kind of found out about it. Right. And what I did. I'm sure other people found out in other ways as well, but I just remember I saw a tweet from one of our players. It was Pekko who put out, I think it was a GoFundMe or something along those lines, talking about Devin Still and his daughter and raising awareness about that situation. And I kind of passed the link on to some people internally, and just with the caveat, like, hey, this is happening. I'm not sure how we can be involved with this. And it never really was meant to be like, oh, hey, let's make this a big PR campaign or get it out there to the public. It was more so the Bengals are a very family-oriented organization. It's run like a family-owned business. Mm. And the ownerships are very involved in day-to-day, and I would meet with ownership routinely.
Wow.
And they had a meeting, and they decided on the jersey sales, and it all kind of just took off from there. And I'm also thankful for the organization for kind of given me the responsibilities I had, you know, as a younger professional. A lot of what we were doing, it didn't have to be run past anybody. It was, we trust you to kind of help guide the narrative. And internally we'd all speak and make sure we're on the same page, but we, you know, had a lot of leeway in how we wanted to approach it and present our plans.
And that's really cool to hear. We talk about trying to convey emotion and humanize players and tell these significant stories. And you guys were doing it, you know, early on there and did a great job, and it still resonates today, no doubt. And I guess, how do you guys, especially being a lean team, I mean, you look at effort versus reward, what was it like kind of balancing those storytelling, humanizing features and sort of more behind the scenes stuff with the day-to-day football stuff? Like, how much should we spend on highlights and hype videos versus, you know, interviews and feature stories and again, that more off the field type aspect?
Well, I think it's also important to kind of to note here, the Bengals are very football first, and that's something that they share with the Packers. That's something that I've been told is, if a decision is going to be made, it's going to be football centric.
Mm-hmm.
So this, keeping that in mind, our fans, at the end of the day, it's good to offer the behind the scenes, but they also, you got to think, why are they following us? Well, they're going to want to know stats. They're going to want to know outcomes. Mm-hmm. So you just need to make sure that you're offering the expectations first, and then building on top of that for the added stuff that can be different from maybe what other teams are doing.
Makes sense. And you guys had no shortage of highlight makers there over the years, no doubt. And I know if people think of, you know, the Bengals having their struggles on the field with, you know, having tough seasons here and there. And what was it like when the team wasn't performing as well, and, you know, trying to keep up the energy of the fans? And I even mentioned this kind of in prepping in my notes for this interview of, yeah, you kind of always have those super fans that will stick with you. And I guess, what was the experience like from a social media strategy perspective when the team was playing well versus when the team wasn't playing as well, and how that affected your guys's, you know, your strategy and day to day?
Well, I was fortunate enough that I've been a part of good teams. This past year with the Packers was a fantastic team.
Yeah.
And the 2015 Bengals, that team started 8-0, I believe. They were a fantastic team as well. If you have a team that's performing well on the field, the content's likely going to perform well as well. It's national media picks up on it. They want to tell the story of the behemoths in the league at the time.
Mm-hmm.
When you're not having as good of a year, that's a little bit more of a challenge, because you need to share the stories that, hey, we might not be getting the results, but here's how we're getting better. Or
yeah,
you need to, I think one thing the Bengals did an extremely good job of with their website and content in general, they're not shy about owning up to, here are some areas that we know need to improve. They've very much run the website like a newspaper. Jeff Hobson's the writer there. He's done a fantastic job over the years. But as from a content strategy side, when you're having a down year, that also gives you a chance to maybe try new things. Mm-hmm. You realize engagement's probably not going to be as great just by virtue of on-field performance does. Mm-hmm. In fact, it's going to play a role. And if you're having more of a down year, how can you creatively keep that fan excitement? How can you creatively show the team in maybe a different light that they can't get elsewhere? So yeah, the down years were actually, you know, for me, they were still a challenge in an exciting way.
Were there some like cool experiments looking back now and saying, there's some that we just sort of tried because we had nothing better to talk about, or because we wanted to take a shot because it was one of those down years that really sticks with you? Or is it highlighting players and the great plays they're still making, or the young guys who are still getting better every day? Like, what were some of those maybe those wins that stick with you, saying, hey, this is something that I'm glad we were able to try this and it worked?
Honestly, it's developing a voice. I know that it hasn't necessarily been the strongest voice on social media. When you look now at some of the teams that have, like, I think the Chargers are fantastic. I think mm-hmm. the Panthers are fantastic. You know their voice when you look at them. honestly, those down years, like, I know there's one drive that didn't end up the way we wanted it, and I just tweeted out an emoji that was like an unimpressed face. And shortly thereafter, this is a game, I it was not pretty. And something happened after that where it just was getting worse. And I just quote tweeted that emoji, and it just said update with like an even worse emoji. And that was one of our top performing posts. And I honestly, I think it resonated with fans because they were all feeling it too. And it helps for them to realize, like, look, the team's not satisfied with where they're at. Yeah. And you share their frustration. And those type of things are adding a voice to your account takes time. And you need to have buy-in from a lot of people in your organization, because at the end of the day, you represent the organization and the team. And you need to just be mindful of, you know, everyone who – works there is represented by what you're putting out.
It's really well put. I think, you know, you really do have to be able to relate to your fans, and not, it doesn't help anyone if you're trying to, you know, to sugarcoat a situation that no one's happy with. And you ride the highs and you ride the lows, and it makes the highs feel that much more genuine and authentic if you did not, you know, point out and acknowledge the lows, because then, you know, you can't connect that way. So I'm glad that you guys were able to be able to have that more genuine human voice and personality behind the, you know, the posts, the tweets, the content, the social media. So I do want to briefly then transition going from, you know, a different voice and a different personality with the Bengals. You were kind of there from the ground up as things were being built. And then you go to a historic, you know, franchise like the Packers, and historic is maybe an understatement. You know, they are one of the franchises in really pro sports all around the world that has a brand, has a, you know, a large following and sort of this culture around it. So, you know, what was it like trying to really come in and help them, you know, do what they're doing, but, you know, and get better and all that and bring your skills to the table, but also trying to learn, okay, let me try to learn about, you know, all the history, all the personality behind this brand and everything I can about the Packers, because the people you're talking to have lived it for generations.
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, going back to the Bengals one last time here, yeah. I know I make it sound like I don't want it to sound like it was a one man coming in and really developing the department. That wasn't the case. Darius and I started together at the same time. Before mm-hmm. us, there was Andy Ware, who oversaw the website. It was just a shift in the focus to the video side of the content, the multimedia side of the content. Gotcha. That was the biggest change, was just a more of a focus on building that up. There still was a department, Andy Ware. I mean, that guy, he was a machine. So shout out to him. But going to the Packers, I'm from Wisconsin originally, and obviously I went to University of Wisconsin and I grew up cheering for the Packers. So for learning the history of the team wasn't really difficult because I was raised on it.
Right.
I was chomping at the bit for this kind of an opportunity. And I honestly never thought there would be an opportunity to work for the Packers. It was kind of surreal that it came up. And they're very well established and very well run in this field. They have a very stellar broadcast team, and they had a social media team already as well. Mm-hmm. With Ryan Hartwig and then a couple interns in that area. And then, the digital field with Duke Bobber really looking at the app and website and connected TV apps. It was just, that was one of the very appealing things about this opportunity as well, is I went from more of a leaner shop that was growing, and with the Bengals now, their resources are great. And I'm really excited to see what they do this next season, especially with the Joe Burrow content. Mm-hmm. But I went to this team that was established with the departments already and on a much larger scale, and seeing how to coordinate and operate there has been spectacular as well.
I mean, I know you basically, and we talked about this a little bit too, that you didn't have much of a social media training camp, so to speak. You literally showed up and it's time to go to work. So was it just a matter of picking up some of the, you know, some of the practices that they had there in place already, and, you know, making sure they earned the trust of the players, of the coaches, of the PR staff, and, you know, how was it in ingratiating yourself in a really rapid period of time?
Yeah, I just kind of hit the ground running. I started the very first week of the season when we open up on that Thursday night against the Bears, and the team traveled on Wednesday, so really, I had 2 days to kind of get acclimated. What really helped me though is my background with the Bengals and kind of being versatile. It really was transferable to the Packers when I showed up. They were like, "Hey, this first game, we're going to have you focus on helping getting the highlights out real time." Mm-hmm. Great. I've been doing that and kind of just grown from there. It was baptism by fire, to say the least, but I think they did a very good job kind of preparing me for expectations. And as the season has progressed and where we're at now, really kind of growing responsibilities and helping with strategy.
And I think just to take a step back too, I mean, anyone with social media in their title and having, you know, being a social media coordinator and throughout your career, I know you have a obviously the really strong video background. You did the post-production stuff at Wisconsin and as well as with Cincy. And how has your skill set, whether it's, you know, evolved is maybe the wrong word, but, you know, have you found that you can focus on certain things, or, you know, is there certain videos that you know, okay, I can produce this for social versus, you know, oh, this is a bigger video project that is, you know, best left to our, you know, our full-time production team. Like, how do you balance those day-to-day video needs for social media?
For a lot of what I'm doing now, if I want it polished, I'm going to go to the big boys in our broadcast team. They do a very good job of giving up, you know, a clean product. And if it's something that I think is going to need more attention, I'll put it on their plate. For the most part, if I need something turned around quickly, like a highlight tape for practice or daily things like that, we had a great team this past season. Our intern Allie was good at helping getting it's more so getting the raw stuff out there, because you can get just as much, if not more, engagement from the raw stuff in real time than if you were to polish it up. And that goes back to the whole efficiency thing, effort reward. And so for the social media side, we definitely have been focused on what can we apply to keep it within brand, but also get it out there as quickly as we can, and making sure that it gets consumed as quickly as possible before other people get it out.
And I will say too, like the raw stuff does perform very well, but you guys were able to also present that quick raw behind the scenes access, but still do so in a way that felt like it was thoughtful and on brand, and oftentimes, you know, using different compositions on IG stories and playing around with different ways to present content. So it wasn't just the same old game day footage and the same old routine, which, you know, a lot of us in sports do see a lot of times, because it's hard to present the warm up a different way every week. But how'd you guys go about sort of planning, this is what a game day is going to look like, you know, home versus away perhaps. And, you know, these are the sort of was it around using templates or just brainstorming different ways to present similar content, looking at what other teams or other sports or other brands are doing? How'd you guys go about, you know, keeping that fresh feeling every Sunday?
Well, Ryan Hartwig, the social media manager, he's very much the general of everything that happens on a game day, and we'll outline who needs to be where and when, whatever is the main focus. And we basically present, these are the must haves. And then these are the might be happening, keep an eye out. And it just comes down to preparation. And with the IG stories, those were the babies of Jen Fisher and Allie Pinter, our interns this past season. Allie's with the 76ers now, I believe. Mm-hmm. And it's they just took ownership. And I think that's another part of a successful department is allowing people, or a successful department will allow people to take ownership of projects and give them responsibility and trust them. And Ryan's really good at putting us all in positions where we can cover everything and keep it different. And the interns were just very creative in presenting what ends up being kind of routine week after week, but like you said, present in a different light.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And I mean, I think IG stories in the last couple of years have certainly become a major, major focus, and maybe at the expense of Snapchat. Obviously TikTok has come along in the last year as well, and this season will be the first season with TikTok really being a big part of a much bigger part of the strategy, no doubt. So especially, you know, you being in this NFL game for long enough now, how have you seen the transition from, say, a Snapchat to an IG stories, in terms of, you know, what's getting time spent on it and focus spent on it on a given game day? Was there a point where you were like, when you guys were like, okay, you know, the numbers are slipping on Snapchat, or IG Stories is too big of an opportunity for us to not put all of our attention to it? Like, how has it been to adopt these new platforms, including TikTok, in the past few months?
TikTok is a fun animal right now. let's go there real quick.
Yeah.
TikTok it's interesting. It's the Wild West right now when it comes to sports teams and TikTok. It's new. It's a fun toy that people have been experimenting with. Obviously, things have changed with music and what you can and can't do as brands. That, to me, is going to be the most exciting thing to see moving forward, making sure, especially after I know it's kind of exploded with the quarantine and the pandemic, making sure that's not a flash in the pan, because when I started full-time in social media, there was a thing called Vine, and that was something that I kept getting pressured into. It was brought up, do the Bengals need a Vine? And at that time, that's when Twitter started rolling out the video capabilities. And that's when my department had to decide, well, would it just be doubling up on Vine at the time?
Yeah.
It was actually one of the things I'm most proud of is making that decision where we didn't really go the Vine route, and it worked out for us as a gamble. And we went in on the Twitter video, and that's still around. Just seeing where TikTok goes is going to be super exciting. As far as stories go, there's obviously Instagram has a big engaged audience. But we find that our audience on Snapchat and Instagram, they're very receptive, and we don't really want to shortchange either one. So we do our best to give a nice behind the scenes look. That's really our focus with our stories, is that behind the scenes personal look on a game day with the players.
Why do you think that the NFL, probably more than any other league, I mean, not to make a huge generalization, but it seems like the NFL as a league and among its teams has been, you know, still keeping Snapchat on the radar, maybe not to the same dedication or degree, or, you know, most of the content's from camera roll instead of live shot footage like it was maybe a year or two ago. Is there something that we don't know, or is there something that we should know about, you know, the NFL and you guys as a club, even about, you know, where Snapchat still has, you know, plenty of value worth extracting to keep a focus on it?
For us, the audience is still there. Mm-hmm. That's really what it comes down to for us. There's still that group of people that are consuming the content on that platform. They're familiar with it. And maybe this is a change in demographic, but like, my mom's on Snapchat now. That used to not be the case. So it's still there. It might not be as the Snapchat of old. You think, oh, it's the younger demo. I think it's more distributed now. We just still have a large audience consuming on it. So, and until that's really kind of dying out, we're going to still provide our fans that content.
And I got to ask one last thing about TikTok, because I'm sure people can't get enough TikTok these days. But as you guys start to really now, as you get closer and closer to, you know, training camp and hopefully, a full season with no interruptions and all that, how are you guys starting to think about TikTok in terms of how it's going to fit into the season strategy? I think we're all kind of wondering, like, is it a game day destination, or is it not really meant for that live and second screen type experience? You're not necessarily looking to see what the Packers post on this game day, especially with the way the timeline is not chronological. I'm sure there's still conversations to be had, and we're still months away from the first kickoff of the regular season. But, you know, where do you guys see TikTok fitting into the overall strategy? And even today, what does TikTok do for you, or who's to help you reach, or what kind of content does it help you produce that you can't do elsewhere?
I mean, that's where it goes back to saying it's still very much the Wild West. I think it's a lot of, you know, trial and error at this point to see what is the best practice. Other teams, thankfully, in other leagues have been using it. I look at the NBA a lot for TikToks. I know Golden State has done a phenomenal job with some of the content I've seen, and that's kind of inspired what we do. And honestly, this upcoming season, there's a lot up in the air about this upcoming season, so it does make it a little bit more complicated to plan for it. But I think it does kind of give you a unique opportunity to showcase personalities that maybe you don't get. Like, our Instagram stories are kind of like raw. Yeah. It's it, and this is going to be a more, hey, they're putting forth the effort to do something goofy or different. So I think moving forward, you're going to see a lot more of that from teams.
I think it's well put, and dovetails perfectly into our next question. And just a couple more minutes here left here with Stephen Huddy, social media coordinator for the Green Bay Packers, and then we'll get to the episode's shareable stat. We talked a little about the Bengals and their voice, their personality. And if I were to say and ask you, who do the Packers want to be on social media? What is their brand about? What is their personality? What is their voice? How would you want fans to answer that?
Well, I think one of the first words that comes to mind when you think about the Green Bay Packers is tradition. It's a team with a rich and proud history, and that's something we try to highlight and showcase on our social channels. The organization is football first. The decisions that are made are with, you know, the football team in mind and the betterment of the team, and the end goal of hoisting a Lombardi trophy at the end of the year. So we try to provide what's expected from fans with the latest news and highlights, and cover the team in that regard. But we're also evolving. And this past year, I think it's a real testament to our team and some brainstorming and honestly, some luck with the characters that we have on the team. We were doing some more pop culture related content. And when you have guys like Za'Darius and Preston Smith added to the team, they're performing on the field, but they're good characters to work off of too. So we're doing like the Super Smith Bros content, parody of Super Smash Brothers and Mario Brothers, and it was just a blast. And I think going forward, we're going to try to keep pushing the envelope, keep that traditional side of what we've done in the past, and maintain the coverage that you're expecting from the Packers account, but also have some fun and provide some more entertainment.
Does any of that change at all when a new coach, Matt LaFleur, comes in after? I mean, I know you that's the only Packers coach that you know as an employee, but, you know, Mike McCarthy was there for so long. A new coach comes in with maybe a different voice, a different energy, a different, mindset, different taglines or slogans. Or does that change at all? Or is the Packers brand really so sacred that, a coach is just a steward of the brand as opposed to, remaking it?
I feel like the Packers brand is going to stay consistent, but the voice contributing to that message can change. Matt LaFleur was obviously, he's one of younger coaches. He was very,
Was there anything interesting to come out of Zach Taylor joining the Bengals and how his personality and what he was talking about kind of, made its way into social?
Well, Zach Taylor starting with the Bengals, it was one of the last, things I did before I left for this opportunity. It's remarkable just to see how far social media has come. When he first stepped into Paul Brown Stadium to be announced as coach of the Bengals, the people that were there to meet him, social media team, our PR staff, yeah. It's amazing that that's where we're at now, is some of the first people to get to meet the newsworthy events. It's going to be your social media and content team. And I feel like that's definitely a big change from before, where is kind of behind closed doors for so many places, and then you had a press conference. We were walking around with Zach Taylor, and when you first saw Andy Dalton in the locker room, was a cool moment to capture, when they talked about, their kids and their families, how's everyone doing? And Zach Taylor, the first time in his office, was really cool. We were there. We just kind of walked around with them, and I also feel like coaches are being very mindful of the content social team, because Zach Taylor right away learned everyone's name, and he was that kind of a guy, or is that kind of a guy, where, he'll learn your organization, he'll learn your name, and it's hard not to cheer for him.
Yeah, they definitely get it more these days than any time before. The last one before you see him, though, is a little shareable stat, and I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about this, because I am a noted fan of everything the Packers do with their sponsored social. I think it's do a great job of weaving in brands in a relevant, non-intrusive way that, adds to the fan experience. So from what you can tell after your first season there and now going through an off season, what is it like, how does sponsored social come together and work for the Packers, and what allows you guys to be so effective and come up with great stuff?
I mean, honestly, I think it just comes down to post-performance. If you're already producing quality content that is performing, I feel it's easier to get a sponsor tied to that. And then again, most of my background comes from Bengals from 2014 until now. Packers, they just have produced really good content. And at the end of the day, I think it's easier for a sales team to go into a meeting with a sponsor and just show them how something performs rather than try to pitch an idea when you have concrete numbers.
So like something like the Chevrolet drive of the game, which I think is great, makes sense. You're going to show a drive graphic after a scoring drive in particular. And a scoring drive's always going to perform well because people like when the team scores. And so with something like that, who connects those dots and says, hey, you know, we're talking about a drive after each drive. Is there an auto sponsor that makes sense here, or this makes sense for like, is that just a close collaboration between the social team and the sponsor team? And maybe it worked differently with the Bengals. I'd be interested to know that as well. You guys just have a great, you know, rapport and communication with the sponsor team there.
Yeah, Ryan Hartwig speaks to our sponsor team. And honestly, I feel like our sponsorship team is just pretty good about identifying opportunities. And if we focus on creating content that has potential, they're going to find it and really run with it. When it came to the, you know, working with the Bengals, it was very similar. I'd talk to our sponsorship team. I'd run reports at the end of the year, kind of give them, hey, this is the best performing stuff that isn't tied to somebody. And would go from there. And towards the end, that was also a big shift, I feel, as an industry, in the industry as a whole, is getting content teams more involved in the sponsorship aspect and coming to the table with what works, what is possible, or, hey, somebody from sponsorship sales says, we're going to be speaking with, you know, such and such for an opportunity, and then brainstorming with them unique ideas.
I definitely love that. It's definitely a theme that we've seen continue to play out as you, like you said, the industry has matured and people get it that, hey, if you want sponsored content that's going to perform better, get the content team involved and don't just slap a logo on something because you have to fulfill or you have to throw it in with part of an agreement. I love that. Well, Stephen, we're not going to get to all my questions, so we'll skip the topics around the Jordan Love draft pick, and we'll have some more fun coming up with you in our Hurry Up Offense. But first episode's Shareable Stat. We'll be right back with that.
Fantastic conversation with Stephen Huddy, social media coordinator for the Green Bay Packers. Stick around because we're going to get to know him a little more in our upcoming segment. But first, we have this episode's Shareable Stat. And this shareable stat comes from the recent Sport Techie State of the Industry conference. There was a presentation by the Golden State Warriors looking at their marketing strategy and their data strategy. And they looked at the factors that make up brand perception and how that's affected by fans. And the one that stood out to me, and they, you know, the man from the Warriors, the professional from the Warriors, pointed out as well, is that 20% of the brand perception comes via word of mouth. You know, in the marketing space, word of mouth is always talked about as this great, powerful channel to affect perception, to affect marketing, but one that's hard to measure. Of course, you can't measure conversations as much as, you know, we think our phones might be listening to us and trying to measure conversations. But word of mouth is so powerful. It's as intimate as possible. It's that first person endorsement that can really have a strong effect on. In this case, the brand perception was what was going into it. After word of mouth, website was the number one, and word of mouth number two, email, and then social media. So a lot of different ways to affect how fans feel about the brand, but word of mouth is one that's worth taking into account and thinking about how you can affect word of mouth. A lot of it is what you're doing on these other channels, but understanding, you know, where that word of mouth is coming from. It can also be one-to-one messaging. It could be a text message. It could be, you know, a one-to-one message on any of these other platforms, a direct message, sharing content that's going to affect that brand perception as well. But how can you help your fans, your ambassadors especially, your most avid fans, start and have conversations that put your brand in a positive light? So we always think about, you know, what are the goals with social media? It's to, you know, brand exposure, activation, fan engagement, data capture, sales. It can also be to start conversations, whether that's online or offline. So pretty cool stat that came from the Golden State Warriors in a presentation they gave at a Sport Techie conference, that 20% of the team's brand perception, the way they measure it, comes from word of mouth. All right, that's episode shareable stat. Give us some thought and stick around, because we're going to have some fun with Stephen Huddy of the Green Bay Packers.
Back from this episode's shareable stat, and I am joined once again by Stephen Huddy. He is the social media coordinator for the Green Bay Packers. Stephen, you knocked it out. You kicked ass. You scored a touchdown on your interview. Are you now ready to do some hurry-up offense?
Let's do it.
We know that Aaron Rodgers up there is one of the best with the hurry-up offense, so you got big shoes to fill. But let's start by going back to your time with the Badgers. tell me your most memorable game from your time at Wisconsin, the game that will always stick with you from your time there.
As an employee, the 2011 game versus Nebraska, Monty Ball scored 4 touchdowns. It was a blowout 48-17 win. And the coolest thing for me was walking off the field. I was walking with Russell Wilson, and we were just talking. It was really cool. Just a guy. He treated me like he knew me. It was pretty cool. 2010, Wisconsin beating number 1 Ohio State. David Gilreath running the opening kickoff back. Fantastic. Matt LePay's call also gives you goosebumps. I love it.
Oh, man. You were at Wisconsin at a good time. That's awesome.
And fun fact, Terrell Pryor was a quarterback at Ohio State. And in 2015, he actually was with the Bengals. So it was kind of cool going full circle. Like, oh, hey, I watched this guy at Camp Randall. And now he's working with me.
I love that. It's so cool. Number 2 for you, Steven. Tell me, you spent a lot of time with video production, even going back to your time in Wisconsin. Just throughout your career, what's kind of the most important video or video production lesson you've learned? It can be about social media video, it can be about video production in general, something that you really take to heart.
I live by effort versus reward. Sometimes the best performing content is going to be the raw stuff that just shows emotion. You should always, always, always be efficient. And I guess end of the day, number 1 video tip would be to set up early and be prepared to wait.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure both when it comes to setting up a tripod or even just standing in a place with your hand up and your camera open.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I love it. Number 3, with your time with the Bengals, tell me the Bengals player that was the most fun to work with for social media and why.
Carlos Dunlap embraced social media really early on. He's very personable. He's productive on the field, which helps as well. And he understood about building his brand, and he has done a great job with that.
I like that. A couple good ones there, and a couple of good players on the field as well. All right, number 4. Tell me the most popular social media post from your time with the Bengals and also from your time with the Packers.
Most popular social media post for the Bengals is our April Fool's Day joke a few years ago. I don't want to go into too much detail. It went viral. And if you Google Cincinnati Bengals April Fool's, I think you'll see it involved us changing our colors at the time. Leave it at that. People kind of took it and ran with it. And yeah, it may have turned into people thinking there was shade thrown.
Oh, wow. Oh, that's beautiful. How about this past season with the Packers? What was that top performing post of the year?
I think going to the NFC Championship game was, winning and going there was way up there. And it's hard to top that. I mean, on-field performance is your best ally.
Not too surprising there. That always definitely always helps. And that's why it's also important, I think, to look at those ones that are unpredictably really good. If you win the NFC Championship, that you're going to have a high performing post.
And I think what helped that too is just the plan that we had in place and the look. We went with the frozen tundra field because we had a home game at Lambeau, and then kind of transitioning that to, hey, we're going to California to play the 49ers. So we had like a frozen, Golden Gate Bridge graphic, right, and all sorts of stuff, kind of bringing that feel to the 49ers there.
Oh, I love that. That's really cool. All right, number 5 for you, Stephen. Tell me, and you can take this to really just give us some of your bigger picture takeaways as a social media coordinator, social media person in the NFL for years now, and as we've been talking about it. So, like, what are some major, guiding principles or big lessons throughout social media in general that you want to leave folks with today?
Yeah, so I always encourage ideas and find solutions. If you want to foster creativity, have goals. Don't say no. Ask yourself how you can do it. Your goals shouldn't be just to keep pace with the industry. Your goal should always be to try to set the standard. Another way to do that is to always be learning. The field is constantly evolving. You should always be looking at the next big thing in your skill set. Just remember, you represent the team and the brand. Think about your approach and your strategy. Be ready to explain it to anyone. Remember that many people with questions may not have grown up with social media. So depending on where you work, you'll have to be able to present your thought process and explain why it is significant.
Yeah.
And the final one I think is important is, remember, social media is meant for dialogue. You're supposed to engage and create conversation. It should not be used as a billboard. Don't just throw something up there and post it and let it sit there. Mm-hmm. You should encourage that dialogue to happen.
Man, I what a treasure trove of great insight there you just gave. I mean, I love it. I think a lot of times we don't appreciate how much strategy is going into this. We also, I think, don't like sometimes forget that there's the word social and social media. I think maybe this quarantine has helped put the social back in it, and you're seeing a lot more focus on engagement and people actually interacting. And too much good stuff there. Just people that are listening should listen to the last 2 minutes again and take notes. That's awesome.
I appreciate that.
Number six for you, Dan. This is going to be probably the most fun question. Have you done a Lambo leap?
I have not done a Lambo leap. I've wanted to. It's on my to-do list. But I have made a snow angel at Lambo.
We'll give you half credit, and we will look forward to the day when you can do your first Lambo leap. It's got to be on the bucket list, right?
Oh, for sure. Before I leave here, if I ever leave here, it will definitely happen.
Just so cool. We know you're Wisconsin through and through, but let's go back to Madison. Tell me, if we go there, catch a Badgers game, and we want to get some good food afterwards, what's the best meal to get around Madison, and where are you going to take me?
We are going to get cheese curds at the Old Fashioned, and we'll probably sip on a couple Old Fashions there as well, because that's a truly Wisconsin experience. And if it is late night, we'll swing by Ian's Pizza and maybe get mac and cheese pizza, slice of ladder, one of their other unique flavors.
Oh, beautiful. I was hoping cheese curds would be part of that answer, and you did not disappoint. That's great. All right, before we get toward the end here with you, Steven, if you were talking to someone who is hoping to become a social media pro, social media sports pro, and they're just coming up, what's your number one tip for someone that's trying to get to that position?
The more versatile you can be, the better opportunities you're going to have in the field. I firmly believe you never know what resources you're going to have depending on the opportunity. So the more you can do, the better.
That's a great one. I mean, these days in particular, you got to be a five-tool player. All right, last one for you. We are going to assume the Packers are in the Super Bowl this coming year, because why not? So it's your time to make a prediction, though. Who are they going to be facing off against? Who's going to be their AFC opponent?
I have been saying this since 2013, Packers and the Bengals in the Super Bowl, and I'd be fine with that.
Oh man, it'd be the ultimate Huddy Bowl. That's awesome.
I'm fine with that. I always cheer for the team that gets me a ring, though. So,
so there you go. Mark it down: Packers, Bengals, Aaron Rodgers versus Joe Burrow, and we'll see who wins the Huddy Bowl.
I've been wrong since 2013, but why stop the streak?
One of these days. All right, Steven, you kicked ass in the hurry-up offense. We got in the end zone just in the time. Your chance to take over the podcast now and tell us your social media all-star to follow, whether it's someone on Twitter or not, but just tell us who they are and why they're following.
Look, just with how things are right now and with everything going on in the world, we need to laugh. We need to smile. So I'm going to go with Dog Rates on Twitter. Just get a smile, get a laugh. It's pictures of dogs, and it's just humorous.
Love that. No one has ever been upset about seeing a cute dog in their feed. So we'll fully endorse Dog Rates for sure. And how about yourself, Steven? Where can we find you, as well as all things Packers, on digital and social media?
Yeah, I'm at Steven_Huddy. That's HUDY on Twitter. But follow the Packers on our Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, there's Snapchat, TikTok, YouTube, Roku, Amazon Fire, and of course the official Packers app. Plenty of options.
Plenty of places to follow the Packers. They really do a great job across platforms. I mean, I was gushing about the Packers before we started recording, even during this call as well, about how much I appreciate the, you know, the work, and it speaks to not just you, but of course Ryan and the whole team there. And so I really appreciate you giving some insight into your time with the Packers as well as with the Bengals, and look forward to the season ahead.
Absolutely. And shout out to Duke Bobber for his tremendous work on all those platforms as well. Hardworking guy.
Hell yeah. You guys got a hell of a team there, on and off the field. Love it.
Really enjoyed getting to know Stephen Huddy, social media coordinator for the Green Bay Packers. Has a lot of good lessons that he's learned throughout his career working with the Bengals and now the Packers. And look forward to seeing what he and the team there can do with the upcoming season, that hopefully we'll have a full season and the Packers can play it out and we get some great content from the team as we've come to expect. But that'll do it for this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Thanks again for listening. I am your host, Neil Horowitz. Find me on Twitter, NJH287. Hit me up on LinkedIn as well and connect with me there. You can also check out more content I post there. And visit the website dsmsports.net for additional articles and the podcast archive. And you can always find the podcast across any of the podcast platforms that you prefer. Until next time, this is Neil Horowitz signing off for the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast.